Well, I think it's 4:15, and others may join us, but... I'll say a few things first, and then what I would like us to spend time doing, you know, is really providing input, critique, whatever, regarding what I have up here. And in some ways, this is lapsing into what I did with Lutheran World Federation when we would do, have a consultation. It was like, we would be editing on the screen. We won't necessarily be editing on the screen, but we will be, at least I'll take notes of some of the things you say or don't say. My name is Karen Blomquist. This is the last in the week of sessions on radicalizing Reformation. And what I want to focus on today is Here We Stand, which is a movement that some of us are hoping might get started. Actually, one of the people that especially have been encouraging this is somebody who just sent me this book yesterday, Courage to Think Differently, George Johnson.
Oh, yes.
Who was an ALC World Hunger person years ago, and he's in his 80s now and down in Southern California. But he said, I hope a group of you will pick up the initiative and move forward with some of what he's been focusing on. So, among other things, I received this in the mail yesterday here at Holden, and with a note saying, I would love to send all kinds of free copies to staff and directors or whatever here at Holden. So I haven't been able to pick that up with Peg and Chuck yet, but and this is really a compilation of a lot of essays from a lot of different people, Brueggemann, who we heard this morning, and a number of other people. So it's bringing together a lot of different perspectives, as well as some pieces that George has written. And he's certainly been involved in a lot of solidarity work with Latin America through the years, and you know, with dealing more with the systemic kinds of issues behind world hunger, which is how he got pursuing some of this. So in many ways, what I'm going to be focusing on is really an initiative that he's wanting to urge some of us to follow through on. And I think what Michael was doing on calling and Kairos in the last hour was a good backdrop for this. But let me just first of all say a few things, because certainly one of the other people that I think has influenced a lot of us in North America, and I think has been at Holden, is Douglas John Hall. And I find that what he said is that theology, not as some esoteric up there kind of thing that only a specialist do, but theology is the ongoing activity of the whole church that aims to clarify what gospel must mean here and now. What becomes crucial is the ongoing discerning of the situation into which news that becomes good is preached, taught, and lived out. In other words, at least how I've unpacked this is good news is like, well, what is the news that especially, you know, how does the gospel especially need to be spoken in terms of what's going on here and now? It isn't just a static kind of thing or a time-bound kind of thing, but it has that kind of good news spoken contextually. Or as Luther put it, discerning that little point where the world and devil are at the moment attacking. So that is kind of just a preface to this. And so what I would like to do, especially with our group being rather small, although I'm having you sit on that side of the fireplace because so you can see the screen here, is for us to go through what at this point is really just a draft of what possibly would be an invitation to become a part of this movement. And when we get done, if some of you want to give me your emails and want to be, at least once we get this moving, to be perhaps connected, that would be quite appropriate. But the basic invitation is, are you deeply disturbed, even outraged, by what is occurring in U.S. society and political life today? are you yearning for explicit faith or theological perspectives to ground, critique, and actively counter this? So in many ways, I would say those of us have been talking about this, and you can read about some of this in what follows, is clearly, I think since November, a lot of us have really been shaken of, you know, what do we say or do now? And again, it's not so much just attached to one person, but I think a lot of things that have been happening in terms of what's happening to democracy in this country. I mean, there's a lot of signals that are not just related to the election of Trump, even though a lot of it culminated and came out into the open with that. But many of us, as this suggests, you know, have been involved in kind of various resistance and protest kinds of movements. I mean, certainly living in Oakland, there's almost, as I said the other day, there's something almost every day. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's like, well, we get kind of weary because I, you know, it's like, do I really need to sign on to that or really show up at that, whatever. And yet, as some people in the small group that had, Paul Wee, who lives now in Washington State, is one of the people that, he and I met near Olympia the other day, just to talk a little bit more about how this moved forward. And basically are saying that, oh yeah, there's lots of conferences with Luther or Bonhoeffer or Martin Luther King and what great things they did and how they really took a stand. But then typically we stop short. It's like, oh yeah, well, that kind of empowers us to say what do we need to say and do now. But oftentimes that's where it stops. In other words, the taking the next step of what does it mean to be, more public in what needs to be said today. And this is certainly, I think people are yearning in lots of ways to say, what does Christian mean today? Actually, that's going to be the first session of Monday when I'm here. Because, you know, there's lots of people here on the West Coast who are saying, well, you know, Christian, we want to run away from that because that's all the stuff connected with Christian right and what that means. And so I think this is a unique opportunity. I mean, I might even venture to use a kairotic moment for the church to be church, to say, what does it mean? How do we speak, as Douglas John Hall said, news that is good in relationship to, well, among other things, in the inauguration speech or the speech after that, it was, you know, playing into people's fears and, you know, get this group or that group or whatever. And of course, it's a kairotic moment too, seeing yesterday, supposedly the House did pass barely the Trump care replacement of quote Obamacare, even though it has to go to the Senate now, so that may stall things, or we'll see what happens there. So I would say this whole attempt is to bring together some people, and George has hundreds of people on his list already, and who are really wanting to say and do something, you know, or at least say we don't want to just feel powerlessness in the face of this, nor do we want to get battle weary saying, oh yeah, we've got to be a part of this campaign and that campaign and whatever. But how can we theologically speak to that? And here it's not so much a matter of theology being brought into politics, but as I was suggesting the other day, I think there are some things going on in terms of the big picture that is related to what the big picture that people of faith have addressed or, you know, or need to address throughout the time. So what I'd like to do is to kind of go through this and pause throughout this, and to, it's only about three or four paragraphs, and for us to get in some good discussion of, oh, here's my pen, you know, and again, it is, you know, you may have some suggestions, because this is, this is basically in process. And I told Paul when I met with him last week, I said, well, I keep working on some of this while I was at Holden. And I said, there may be some folks up there that can help to be a sounding board. And that doesn't mean you have to agree with everything that's here. And again, this is an invitation. So at least George is concerned there needs to be some kind of statement soon. And we're saying, well, maybe not quite yet. Because the idea, as you can see later on, is that there would be a kind of a blog kind of thing that would be a part of this, where people would have some opportunities to provide some perspectives that they think are relevant, as well as a sense of what is happening in local contexts. And so I'm saying that last point because part of our discussion here this afternoon can be you identifying some of the things where, in fact, you or people you know are connected with are, in fact, taking a stand already. As an example of that, the church that I'm at, a member very active in University Lutheran in Berkeley, has for 30 years been a sanctuary congregation. And of course, with Central American people that were not wanting to be deported at that point. Well, of course, the fear within the immigrant communities has really grown in recent weeks and months. I live kind of on the edge of the Fruitvale district in Oakland, where massive numbers of immigrants, especially Hispanic, but not just that. And the immigration center there has like 24 lawyers that are dealing with the deportation kind of thing. So, I mean, that's really a very critical issue. But our congregation in Berkeley has really stepped up to, for example, provide an apartment where somebody at risk of being deported can stay. We're realizing now, maybe not long-term kind of thing, but maybe people that for several days need a place of shelter. And what was interesting is that when, first of all, this was a part of a whole immigration or immigration network that the congregation is a part of. And so there was a very public news conference when this stage of their sanctuary involvement began in July. And, I mean, there were lots of press people there. It was in the front page of all the papers. It was Jewish. I don't know if there were any mosque part of it, but certainly it was Jewish and all very ecumenical group. I mean, it was about 10 different kinds of congregations that came together. But it was Lutherans taking the lead, or at least the chapel was at the forefront. And so the next Sunday, I was going down to the restroom during the service and discovered there were two young women there, one of whom was at risk of being deported. And she said, we live here at Berkeley, but we saw on the Spanish TV that this is a place. And so, in other words, it was very interesting. The congregation taking a public stance along with others became a message in the community that this was an okay place to be. So, I mean, that's just one example of and that congregation has taken the stand on a number of other things, but that has been an example there. The title that this movement has at this point is Here We Stand. Now, for those of us who are Lutherans, this resonates a little bit with Here I Stand, the stance that Luther took. But it's Here We Stand is, it seems as though it speaks to a lot of people, including secular folks who are determined to resist some of what's been going on. And it's also a collective word, we, rather than just here I stand by myself. So it's to go beyond just the kind of individualistic hero kind of stance of, I'm going to take a stance. So, to read the first paragraph, now is an urgent time when people grounded in faith are moved to confess and live out in public a much different vision and worldview from what is now ruling over the U.S. and the rest of the world. A lot more could be said here, but me. Well, let me pause and just see what kind of comments you have around that first paragraph. Or even what I've been saying up until this point.
Well, I think it just sets the stage for what's going to come in your document. That's the reason for the document.
Mm-hmm. In other words, we clearly when we discussed some of this on Skype the other day or last before I came here, it's really people who already are stirred up and who already have been involved in various kinds of struggles through the years. It's probably not by happenstance that I'm probably the youngest. I mean, most of these are retired guys and the small cluster of people. So people who've really put their lives out in a lot of ways in various struggles, but who are somewhat frustrated, saying there's lots and lots of social media, lots of websites where, sign up for this and whatever, but a chance to really say, how do we develop or present some of the theological kinds of things, not in a highfalutin way, but in a way that can really connect with what's going on today and what people are experiencing. So the purpose of it is to really focus that way rather than just saying this is for everybody that's discontented with what's going on today.
It's not just activism, but the faith theological aspect.
So it's like a positive statement, not just reacting against, but trying to have something for.
Yeah. Well, and I would say, at least for me, to me personally, it's also a matter of, given all the stuff that's been going on in recent months, it's very tempting for us to want to just lash out and be as nasty as, well, let's say the other side is being. But, and so how can we as people of faith bring a different kind of witness in the midst of that? We might be as outraged as our neighbors who have no faith connection, but somehow name-calling and the kind of barriers that increasingly are being thrown up to say, they're almost demonizing the right from the left, as some of us feel the right has demonized immigrants or gay or lesbian people or whatever.
I'd just say for that, I add in there, now is an urgent and opportune time.
Good. Right?
In terms of that positive notion because obviously you're right, the temptation is just to lash out or quite frankly to just give up.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Where's
that nice little island out there in Puget Sound that I can go live a hermetic life?
Mm-hmm.
And to say, no, this is actually an opportunity to really put this stuff forward. Mm-hmm. So I push opportunity. Mm-hmm.
Good.
I was just going to say, I think that we sort of feel sometimes like we have there's nothing we can do. So having an opportunity sort of speaks to that there is an opportunity. And I was trying to think about placing myself or placing others, like listening to this or reading this, hearing this, that there are a lot of people who are deeply disturbed and outraged who have not been deeply disturbed and outraged particularly before. I mean, mm-hmm. it's like so things are so egregious that folks who have never taken positions on anything mm-hmm. are now waiting with bated breath every day to find out how their lives are changed or their neighbors' lives are changed. Mm-hmm. Well, isn't this nice?
Well, this isn't my computer's, Carol.
I know. I think you've got the idea there.
Come on.
Yeah. Just hit the X if you... That's right. Thank you.
I saw an interview, for example, with some woman who had never marched before. She was part of the Women's March day after inauguration. And she said, I really felt I had to, even though I haven't been moved before. Mm-hmm. But I think that's underlying what you said. Now, this next paragraph is obviously a lot more could be said there. We want this to be very brief, though. We don't want to have the list of everybody and whatever. But it's grounded in the Hebrew Scriptures, especially in what Jesus said and did in his day, as well as from other faith traditions. So, I mean, the idea is, yeah, even though it's a bunch of Lutherans that are initiating this, and even though there's a, as I said, the title is resonance with, there's some resonance with Lutherans, it's not intended to just be Lutheran. Although courageous figures from the past inspire us, such as Martin Luther, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, and Martin Luther King Jr., and again, we could add a lot of names to that. I'm realizing those are three men, and they're all Christian.
I think of Gandhi.
I think Gandhi might be added to that, or
Dorothy Day.
Yep.
Sojourner Truth.
Yep. So, in other words, there could be added, but clearly we need to have more than just probably these three, but not an endless list either, because the idea is to give people the idea rather than being exhausted.
Or you might a suffragette would probably be a really good person to
identify. Do you have anybody in particular?
But I'm just thinking in terms of people who have spoken out, and
right. Just a little bit sidebar, as some of you heard me say this, our Easter vigil at this same church in Berkeley was framed by a certain U.S. senator who spoke in the Senate a couple months ago against Jeff Sessions, and she tried to quote Coretta Scott King, and of course she was shut down. Elizabeth Warren is what I'm talking about. We didn't mention her name in church, but everybody knew it.
Who was.
So our whole Easter vigil was, and still she persisted. Mm. And we even had on the Christ candle Rosie the Riveter. I mean, this is a very liturgical, Christ-centered congregation, so what I'm going to say is probably something like it isn't. But anyway, we decided, or they, the worship committee, which I wasn't a part of, had decided to do 10 women who persisted in Hebrew scripture. So those of you that have been at Easter vigils, there often are, the story of Nebuchadnezzar and from creation, through Daniel, and some of these stories that people say, is that in the Bible? So another woman and I, we were assigned Esther. So we try to do a kind of contemporary reading of Esther and Vashti's music.
Were all your women named, or did you some?
No, they were named, but it was interesting because some of the people took their assignment and connected with their mother or a woman they knew.
Because I was thinking about sometimes women are unnamed and yet they are strong characters in the Bible.
Yeah, the midwife. I think we had Tamar, we had the midwives, it was Susanna.
The Midrash, the midwives are named, but...
Right. Yeah, but the unnamed. But anyway, all the stories of resistance. And even the Eucharistic prayer, which I have a copy of it, in case any of you want it, is, and still she persisted, you know, mentioning these various women. But then, of course, it was, and Jesus persisted. So it was definitely a Eucharistic prayer. I mean, this was just a preface that they were named, and it was very much focused, as it should be, on Christ in that. But it was interesting how that persistence kind of theme carried into, and people said, yeah, that's really kind of what we should raise up in Easter Vigil. So anyway, all these people, and I think that some of you have made good suggestions.
There's one little error, I think, in there. It says in the fifth line, distinctive to era, in which
to the era in which we live. Yeah. Okay.
All right, and now has worked for.
Yeah, the next line, we have worked for, instead of we are worked for.
We have worked for, yeah, we have worked for, yeah.
Instead of
as you can tell, this is still in very draft form.
Well, it's exciting to be a part of it, yeah. I think.
I always had my editor give the nod out again.
So the idea is, yes, we are inspired by these figures in the past, but again, we often just raise them up. And even the conference I was a part of a month ago at Union Seminary in New York, which was especially raising up Bonhoeffer, you know, there wasn't the time to say, okay, then what do we need to say today? I mean, I think there were people there who were inclined in that way, but that's so often where things stop short. And that's why this sentence is saying, yes, they inspire us, but because of that, we feel the urgency to take a stand, speak, and act in ways distinctive to the era in which we live with its challenges, especially when much of the social justice gains we have worked for in the past are now jeopardized. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting because one evening we're going to talk about various forms of creating community as we get older and living in community, and the co-housing community that I'm a part of is an example of that. And when we dedicated it a few months ago, one of the things I especially try to bring in when we did a little dialogue kind of thing is that because we're an over 55 community, most of us, things that we worked for in the 60s, 70s, and beyond are jeopardized. And the people living around us who are artists and whatever say, oh, well, they're not like we certainly aren't a retirement community because many of us are still working and doing other things. But they're kind of like the activists who still want to keep working on some of these things. I mean, not everybody would say they're an activist in our, but certainly dealing with immigration issues, affordable housing, and other issues, which are really big in the Bay Area because it's unaffordable to live there anymore, is part of what we want to embrace. So this is especially to say, yeah, a lot of us have, in our own ways, been working for and certainly supportive of various social justice gains in the past, but now we're pretty fearful. I mean, this is where I think fear does come in of what is happening in terms of if in fact more and more people are dropped out of, for example, healthcare. Yeah.
Well, I'm wondering, because they're so interrelated and because they're equally important, I believe, to God, do you want to pull environmental justice into this too?
Yep.
Yay, yep. I was thinking the same thing.
Yep. How does creation fit in?
Environment, mm-hmm. that we talk about, mm-hmm. social justice, yep. and environmental.
Yep, I think so. I think that's very important.
Of course, Gaines is a value judgment too.
Yeah. Social and environmental.
And people like Larry Rathbison, who certainly, he's been one of the, he's not part of the planning group, but he's been part of this network. And mm-hmm. so there are people like that who have really pushed this for some years in his writings and actions, etc.
Yeah,
we'll probably get environmental, but yeah.
We have many of his sessions in the audio archive.
Yeah, he's been up here many times.
Yep, that's right.
I can hear his voice.
Yes.
So, I mean, it goes back to part of the stuff I was talking about yesterday. I mean, all, right? Right. We decided all is inclusive
of
all of creation. Yes. So, I mean, and certainly, I mean, the church has been where it has social statements on, you know, care of creation and all of that, and wouldn't want to lose that.
Yeah. Is there any other way to make that more embrace of? Again, we don't want to have a laundry list of everything in here, but I think I sent things some key words so people say, yeah, this is something I want to connect with.
So you think you're talking specifically about that paragraph?
Well, yeah, that one.
I still kind of hung up on beans. I was worried about progress or
social justice gains.
I think
we struggle with that word to say, is that the best word? Right. Because, I mean, clearly...
Yeah, environment to that, yeah.
Well, and, yeah.
Accomplishments.
And I think much of the progress... If you're going to use gains, you might say many of the gains, but I
think... Yeah, maybe progress. I mean, yeah, in terms of all those, to be inclusive of all that, at least, you know, when people work through the laundry list of that, senses of justice, they talk about political justice, social justice, economic justice, and environmental justice. Mm-hmm. That's kind of, if you want to cover the whole waterfront, they put in all four of those. Now, I don't know if all four are necessary.
Yeah, I mean, part of...
Because
part,
again, it becomes cumbersome.
And part of what we want is keep this focused enough, because clearly, I'm aware, as many of you are, that there's lots of other movements, including movements of people of faith. For example, there's a whole eco-reformation kind of website and justice. So in other words, this is intended to connect in, but not replicate what a lot of other groups are already doing. And
I don't see it, well, economic justice is important, but I think this, just as I look at this, I'm thinking primarily around social justice, LGBTQ, and the environment. Environment is what's going to happen with that. So,
well, and I think economic justice and social. I mean, economic justice is part of social.
Yeah,
justice.
Well, it's also. It's not just. I think there's other social justice aspects. I'm concerned about what it means for women. When somebody comes out and says, well, I'm not sure the women should have the right to vote, you know, so it keeps going farther back in terms of the Make America Great seems to be in the 50s, no, 20s.
How far back do we have to go?
That's right. And some of what's being talked about is actually from the golden age of the 19th century.
Yeah.
So-called golden age.
But let's move on to this.
We're gonna run out of time.
Yeah. We need to address the big picture with its various untruths, illusions, and false promises. And some of this is what I'll be focusing on next week on the seeing, remembering, connecting kind of way of getting at some of the biblical material. We need to address the big picture and to do so from distinctive theological perspectives. The reigning false god today, and again, you know, or the false, again, whether we're talking, this is referring certainly more than just Trump, is practicing hardness, toughness, and fear instead of the God depicted in the Bible as compassionate, suffering with people, bringing hope, reconciliation, and redemption for all. Reconciliation and all are in there, and I wasn't even thinking of you.
Wow. just doesn't have recognition yet.
My life is complete.
Actually, one of the manuscripts of a book that I knew, somebody I knew him in Chicago, actually, has he's taught in Brazil and various other places, and he just sent me a manuscript of a book that's been, I can't remember the title, but he's an Old Testament scholar. But it basically, it's really very helpful, because it is describing the kind of passages in especially the Old Testament that the hardliners, the political hardliners, will zero in on, saying, well, yeah, God is a God of vengeance, and, you know, getting the whatever, and of course he's wanting to give the, I mean, he knows these stories and the biblical material really well, so he can bring that to the fore, but says there also is this going on. So that his book was kind of in the back of my mind, at least when I was looking at this.
I'm starting a little bit with the second sentence here.
The reigning false God.
God is practiced in...
Or the reigning ideology, or the reigning...
Well, I think there's a, for me, the false God is me. Mm-hmm. Focusing on self.
Yeah. It's not then, just out there.
Yeah, the Ayn Rand kind of idea, which is then evidenced in hardness and toughness rather than being. Mm-hmm. It sounds like the false God is hardness and toughness. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think it's something else that then is manifested in hardness, toughness, and fear. Mm-hmm. I have a quick rewrite for that, but, or suggestion. Yeah. But
I would rephrase the whole sentence. The reigning false God today is practicing hardness, toughness, and fear instead of the God depicted. So it sounds like it's just framed awkwardly, that it's implying that the God of today is not practicing the God depicted, which doesn't make sense.
So say that again.
So just in terms of like grammatical structure, the reigning false God of today is practicing hardness, toughness, and fear instead of perhaps the compassion, etc., of the God depicted.
We'll give countering adjectives to.
And maybe even flipping the sentence and putting,
instead of
the God we worship,
instead of
it is depicted in the Bible as compassionate suffering, blah blah blah. Blah.
Whereas the God, yeah.
Those are helpful suggestions.
Do you think people will think that reigning false God is a slippery way of saying Donald Trump?
I don't think it's slippery. I think it's pretty direct.
Well, do you want to be that direct? I mean,
it doesn't sound like you do.
Because, I mean, in that sense, what's called for is not just, if you will, opposition to Donald Trump, but
right.
Opposition
because
to
he's representing.
Whole.
I mean, he's the outburst of a lot of stuff that's
he's just
on.
The.
Yeah, and I've been wrestling.
He's just the dummy of all of these things.
I've been wrestling with
By the
this
way, that book that you let me look at, the deer, what was it called?
Deer Hunting with Jesus?
Deer Hunting with Jesus, which was written 10 years ago, basically understanding what working class folks were experiencing, and, you know, and very graphically, it was very helpful. But at one place they say, yes, and for example, buying into what Donald Trump is promoting. There's a page.
10 years ago.
Yeah,
10 years ago.
I saw yeah.
I mean, the fact that, but I think you're right. It's more than just a let's beat up on Trump.
Right.
So I mean, maybe should it just be God's plural, the reigning false gods?
I think so too.
I think to me it's a little ambiguous. What the big picture is, we need to address what is what I'm asking when I see that.
Well, and actually, some of what this group has looked at, the idea is here to contrast that with the individual issues that keep bombarding us continually. Do we stand with immigrants? Do we stand with this group, with that? I mean, I don't sign it.
I don't know. Like, we need to address the issues of something, or
well, in other words, people are already addressing that. But is there a reigning kind of ideology or a kind of big picture is a way of saying the whole ideological framework or worldview.
Well, we need to address. I'm just not clear what the subject or what it is we're addressing in the big picture, I guess.
This is maybe too
if this is a declaration of what we are or what we're about, then I'm not sure what it is there.
I think a couple of things. One is I heard somebody talk about that a lot of what's happening is like playing that whack-a-mole, and one pops up here and you get that one, you pop up here. And so it's hard to get a coalesced kind of narrative to address this in a, and sometimes we get too particular and kind of covering everything, and we don't have that nice pithy statement that says, make America great again, that everybody can interpret their own way. And so I think that's what you're getting is, what is that wholeness that a big picture?
I don't know.
I
kind of
almost say that we need to address the various untruths, illusions, and false promises of the underlying, what was the phrase you said, the underlying framework or whatever it was that you, I like mm-hmm. what you said, I don't remember what it was, but.
Or if you can go back to worldview or something.
Yeah.
Because that's, you've used that before.
Yeah.
Promises of the.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Can we talk about the last sentence in that paragraph? Because I really don't understand what.
We haven't gotten that yet.
I know, but we're running at it.
Okay,
well,
she's
can we come
hungry.
Back later?
And yeah, it'd be good to discuss it.
Does anybody want to comment on that last paragraph?
Let's read
the last sentence. The last sentence or the last paragraph?
The last sentence.
The spirit is making us.
The spirit is making us misfits who are subversive of how things are today. Not over and against, but in community with one another.
Yeah, it is. It's a
confusing sentence. I don't know what that means.
I feel sometimes a misfit.
We're on the outside.
Again, I think that's because this is taken over from a wider discussion of this. It's an attempt to be really. Make this really condensed, but I think your point is helpful, saying, well, what does that mean?
To fresh eyes, yeah.
In other words, that has to maybe be either said differently or omitted or whatever.
It makes me feel that it's not a positive message, it's like putting people down. The spirit is making us misfits. I don't really understand. What it means.
I think it's a call. You're kind of a call to action. There is that what
yeah.
it is?
Yeah. But whether that's the best way to express.
Well, is that what they're saying? We are being called to be misfits.
No.
Mm-hmm. Subversive misfits.
I always think of Sidney Ahlstrom talking about why aren't in his book about religious history of American people. He was interviewed and he didn't. Somebody said, well, you don't talk about Lutherans very much in this. Because he said, well, that's because they were always the countervailing force mm-hmm. of the Great Awakenings and the various other movements.
Is the point to say that it's the spirit who is doing it, or that we're misfits, or
that we should be subversive, or we're not supposed to be subversive?
I'm suggesting that we might say something. We are a countervailing force who is this subversive. And the spirit empowers us to be a counterfeit force, mm-hmm. who are subversive.
Yep. Because it is the empowerment to do mm-hmm. and to say and do something, which
right.
is, as Michael said earlier, people are feeling very powerless.
Well, how about the spirit calls and empowers us?
But misfits is. Negative and subversive is negative.
I thought it meant mm-hmm. that we find ourselves misfits because the spirit mm-hmm. has called us to do something,
right.
and which is contrary to what's going on.
We're not
on.
Called to be misfits, but we.
Well, we're called. We find our a result. Well,
we recognize ourselves.
I'm just saying, by taking action,
I didn't even put that word
we end up finding that we become misfits. Like, we didn't want to be a misfit, we didn't intend to be a misfit, but in the greater scheme of things, we seem to be on the outs.
Well, and I think the certainly if we looked at Luther or Bonhoeffer, you know, they weren't
starting out that way.
Luther didn't exactly expect to be excommunicated from the church, etc.
So is this being moved by the Spirit part of the purpose of this stand we're taking? A part of what, I don't even know what I'm saying.
Because we just want to make
part of this movement, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know what I'm saying.
Anything else regarding around that paragraph? And then, well, this is the last paragraph, so we're almost there. And let me just indicate that probably I will be managing the blog, but I need all kinds of help with IT folks. So if you know of somebody who would be interested in working with me, or just say somebody that's available, that would be helpful. But you can see here, it's engaging and discussing theological perspectives that illuminate and counter what is occurring today, because the theological core of this is what we want to be.
I think that's it, yeah, because I get worried about some of the professors to be Christian handing out Ayn Rand to his staff to read. So.
Well, and once again, I hope that you can reach a broader audience than just the Christian audience, mm-hmm. so that other faith traditions can say, yeah, we're about the same thing. Mm-hmm. And if you're identifying leaders, you know.
Well, that's why we, for example, wanted to avoid anything Lutheran in the title or whatever. Even though, as I said, there's a recognition that some of us have with that "here we stand" kind of thing, but there's lots of people taking stands. But then I want to also, I mean, this the idea is to hopefully involve or on the blog have things that are theological perspectives from the people that sign on, as well as perhaps links with other articles or whatever, but it isn't so much what others are saying so much as it is what we are saying theologically about that. And but then secondly, and the B, examples of how "here we stand" is occurring in local contexts. In other words, the examples of action, so it's not just a matter of, so there is that kind of practicality to it. So maybe we could conclude just by, for example, some of you just, I'm not saying it would be in here, but, you know, for example, I've mentioned some of what we try to do in the Bay Area, but other things that you are connected with or are aware of that in your local settings.
I think there's, in a number of communities, Christian churches are trying to establish relationships with mosques, mm-hmm. you know, to kind of stand in solidarity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's been a Islam, Christian, Judaism conversation group meeting monthly this spring, but it happened to be when I had board meetings, so I didn't able to go with that. And I guess, and then Muslim Christian women have gotten together for tea. So there are some things happening, but I.
And out of that, some pretty significant kinds of stances can come. Mm-hmm. You know, and when I was living in Bellingham, I was very somewhat involved, along with lots of other people, in the attempt to resist the world's, or the West Coast's largest coal terminal being installed at Cherry Point. And we didn't have much luck trying to do the interfaith or ecumenical kind of movement on that. But when the Lummi Nation stepped up to the bat and they took a stand, then it was really interesting because all of a sudden lots of other people, including other people of faith, kind of fell behind them. And they'd done totem pole journeys across the whole of the Northwest, you know, visiting, I think, 50 different Native nations, and probably got into Canada a little bit too. Now, the good news is that the resistance there did convince the Army Corps of Engineers to withdraw the permit. I mean, I'm not sure the battle is all over yet because I'm not there yet and I'm not there. But there were, when hearings were held for that, in a county of 100,000 people, there were 120,000 pieces of testimony. So people really were very active in opposing. Not everybody was, I would say, the vast majority were opposed to it, but you know, the promise of there will be more jobs, well, will there really be more jobs? And even if that were constructed, is the demand for coal still going to be as great in China? I mean, this was basically to ship
lots of coal. They've moved some of that emphasis. There's some discussion in Longview now about that.
Yeah. So I think up along the, certainly in, you know, the Washington, Oregon kind of coast, there's been a lot of that, and up in Vancouver too.
Oh so. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on in BC about coal, natural gas, oil.
Yeah, there's another pipeline heading north of Vancouver they were talking about.
Although this is one place where I was kind of amazed because at least compared in Washington, there's all kinds of permitting processes that it has to go through. We're up in BC, there's some of that, but not nearly as extensive as in Washington, considering in most things, I think the Canadians are better than the US in terms of.
Except for raw sewage from Victoria.
Okay, well.
Well, I had a couple.
Go ahead. There isn't a 6 o'clock session, so if we go a few more minutes, I think we can.
I think I might have forgotten what I was going to say. Go ahead, Michael.
Okay, mine is a question. You've got examples of how Here We Stand is occurring in local context. Do you want to have something in where people could put in announcements or notices of where Here We Stand events will be occurred so that, you know, optimistic. There's lots of folks reading this blog, so they'd like to know if, you know, such and such Lutheran church or churches in Bloomington are going to be organizing a march, and so if that could be in there a month before it happens, others who could read that and participate. So just announcements or however you want to phrase
that.
That's
helpful.
I guess if there's a lot of conversation these days about resistance, resist. And I guess to me that sounds like you're digging your heels in and you don't want to be pulled out of your position. And I'm just thinking that I would think we would want it to be more of a positive moving forward. That's what I would see, rather than digging your heels in. And the other thing is that the folks who had poor economic downturns tended to be the ones that, for example, voted for Trump. And that somehow, in reviewing this work, it seems like it should be reviewed with an eye towards how they would see it and how they can be included in moving forward together.
Maybe even just someplace in there, kind of along with what Carol's saying, is say something about, you know, listening to each, to all perspectives, to each other, to
As I was saying the other day, I think it would be really interesting, given the history that Holden has, of Holden becoming a place where there'd be a very intentional, say a 3-4 day period, where there would be really attempt to hear one another across the polarization and boundaries that are there. Mm-hmm. And I'm just being a quick response to the end of the lecture, but how can this be cultivated mm-hmm. in a very intentional kind of way?
I'm not sure the last sentence I'm not sure is helpful at all. Just say more later or something.
Yeah.
As this grows, more will be coming or something.
That's put in there especially because some of the planning group really want to move ahead with an event and a public statement. It's like some of us are saying, no, this has to percolate for a while and get perspectives and not just rush to an event. And again, because an event is not something that lots of people can afford the time or money to go to.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that can happen through web seminars or whatever later on, but that's not the urgency right now.
I just, in the phrase of just this, the third one up from the bottom, it says, how here we stand is occurring in local context. I would just say occurring locally. It sounds a little academic and the way it is.
Yep.
And locally, it almost sounds like, okay, what can I do in my community?
Locally, and then how people in that area could be connected, you know, the mm-hmm. kind of thing that Michael was pointing to. Okay, thank you much
you
made some very helpful suggestions, and as I said, this is just, you know, whether the committee will move ahead with it, I think kind of excited about possibilities, but the fact